Welcome to At the Organ.
The organist Daryl Robinson has quickly established himself as a preeminent concert organist, professor of organ, and an advocate of new music for the instrument. He won the AGO Young Organist Competition in 2012 in Nashville, and has since gone on to be appointed an assistant professor and head of the organ department at Westminster Choir College. He has appeared on 3 albums as a solo organist or with other ensembles, and he's planning on his second solo album later this year. His first, Sempre Organo, was recorded in 2013 after he won the AGO competition. It was recorded on the Fisk Rosales organ of Rice University in Houston, where Daryl studied with Ken Cowan and received his master's degree. That's what we're hearing right now. Daryl has commissioned new works from composers such as Aaron David Miller, George Baker, David Briggs, and David Ashley White. I got a chance to talk with Daryl recently. He had just performed a concert the night before, and we spoke in the sanctuary of Third Baptist Church in St. Louis, where he told me about how he came to the organ, his unique training and career, a bit about the situation at Westminster Choir College, and some exciting news about heading back to his native Houston, Texas. He starts by telling me how he came to discover the organ.
Like so many, I grew up at a church that had an organ, although actually at First Baptist Church in Pasadena, Texas is where I was first sort of exposed to church, and that was an electronic organ. And then in about my middle school years, I joined another church in town because they had a pipe organ. And luckily the organist there, who was actually a graduate of the University of Houston, was my first organ teacher, Shirley McCord. And so that's sort of how I got started. And from then on, I was in the Houston Boy Choir and went to the Performing Arts High School in Houston, actually as a double bass major. But I was given the opportunity to do some organ orchestral music then, and was studying organ with Jodine Davis all through high school. And then I was very fortunate to sort of find success in church work fairly early on, right out of high school.
Daryl has been at Westminster Choir College since 2015, but he's ready to announce a change and a new appointment.
Well, I've just accepted appointments, two new jobs, actually. First, as assistant professor and chair of organ studies at the Moore School of Music at the University of Houston, and then as cathedral organist for Christ Church Cathedral Episcopal in downtown Houston.
And University of Houston is your alma mater, correct?
Correct, yes. I did my undergraduate studies at the University of Houston with Robert Bates, who is now retiring and moving off to Mexico. And I'm a native Houstonian, so there will be a very good sense of homecoming and on several fronts with this move. The cathedral is a very active music program that features 2 adult choirs, and then also a very renowned treble choir is based there as well. And the cathedral is in the heart of downtown and really has a long history of not only great music and worship, but having a really good focus and mission for serving the homeless community in its local vicinity and having good sense of global mission work as well. So a very fun instrument and a very beautiful room that has Tiffany stained glass windows. And the room, unfortunately, is not the most reverberant space, very low ceiling and wood all around, but exquisite carvings, and the organ was renovated maybe 3 or 4 years ago, new console put on that and everything, so it's very exciting. The organist that's there now is leaving in July to start her artist diploma at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. So she and I are sort of swapping cities in a way, and she and I actually, Monica Chaus is her name, a very talented young organist. We were classmates during my master's work at Rice. She was starting her undergraduate studies, so we already sort of know each other well, and there's some good overlap there. I think one of the things that drew me to Westminster initially were certainly the integration of organ, sacred music, and conducting. While I spend a good amount of my career, obviously, as a concert artist, my roots really are in sacred music. And I have a pretty strong background in choral conducting as well, actually. And so the University of Houston is actually creating a new sacred music program to sort of dovetail with the conducting program that already is there and the organ performance program. So we'll offer 3 tracks in the sacred music area, 1 in organ, 1 in choral conducting, and 1 in sacred music composition, which we believe will be one of the first, if not the first, programs of its kind around. So along with me in the organ faculty will be Matthew Durst, who's been on organ and musicology faculty there. And on the sacred music side, David Ashley White, who's of course is mostly known for his choral composition. His background is actually as an oboist. A lot of folks don't know that. And I've commissioned an organ work from David for my first CD back in 2013 on the Progano label. And David has written a fair amount of organ music. And so it's been fun to collaborate with him actually over the last several years, helping him write organ accompaniments for several of the anthems and organ solo pieces. Right after I won the AGO competition, I started my master's at Rice University. And so I was able to do the recording at Rice University on the fantastic Fisk Rosales organ there. And that program, like I say, it featured at least one new commission work by David White, but then just sort of a wide variety of repertoire that really showcased that fantastic instrument in that space. It's kind of one of the only instances in the world, I suppose, where you have an organ that size in a room that is basically a recording studio. So it was quite an ideal dream to be able to record a CD in there.
You have a new CD you're planning on this year, later this year, or next year?
Yes, July. It'll actually be recorded July 2nd through the 7th or so at Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles on the fantastic Rosales Glad of God's organ there. It's going to probably end up on the Naxos label. We're still sort of shopping that around, trying to figure all that out. So,
at last night's performance, you played two works. One of them was two movements, two scherzos, that were all either commissioned for you or by you, or they were both commissioned by you.
Yeah, right? They were both commissioned by me. One in a very intentional way, and the other one, as I said last night, sort of in a more of a casual friend, just sort of asking for a piece of music. The first of those, the two scherzos by Jason Roberts, came about just based on a conversation that he and I had, that we didn't feel that there was enough sort of whimsical, fun organ music in the repertoire, and especially not new music being composed now, that was both sophisticated, fun, and audience-friendly. So he, I asked for one scherzo. He ended up writing two scherzos for me and said, oh, just pick whichever one you like. Well, I fell in love with both of them, so I've created them as a nice pairing, and they work beautifully together, total contrasting, and both of them provide a unique opportunity to show off stops on an organ that you might not otherwise.
Are you planning on recording those?
Yes. So the recording project in July will have, I suppose, five world premiere recordings on it. So the two scherzos by Jason, Aaron David Miller, I played his Fantasy on Thaxted last night. That was commissioned for South Main Baptist Church for their new Nichols and Simpson organ that's being installed right now, actually.
South Grand in Houston.
Yes, exactly. And that'll be dedicated in August. So that piece was commissioned for that program. I've been sort of showing it off a little, giving it a few test runs here and there. And then last summer, I played for the AGO National Convention in Houston at Rice, and I commissioned George Baker to write a new rumba that's for organ and four Latin percussion instruments. So that'll go on the CD as well. It's always funny. Sometimes when you're commissioning a new piece of music, you maybe have a preconceived idea or you have a specific need. With George, I was really able to go say, okay, look, you know the organ at Rice. What piece do you want to write? And I honestly, I was not expecting George Baker to come back with a rumba for four percussion instruments and organ, and two dancers, actually, is what, the way we ended up doing it. But George just knocked it out of the park. And of course, it weaves in themes from Vidor, and so it has very sophisticated organ sort of tips of the hat. And I think, he just knocked it out of the park in every aspect. So David Briggs wrote a set of variations on Nicaea for me that is really fantastic. And then there's also a new piece by Jeffrey Brillhart that I'm premiering in June at the Kimmel Center called The Philadelphia Flourish, which is going to correspond. It's, I think, the final work in a new collection of works being commissioned by the Philadelphia AGO chapter that'll be published by Shermer later this year. And so Jeff's piece will be on there. He graciously agreed to let me record this.
If I can say so, you seem very young and early in your career to have commissioned so many works.
Well, I think a lot of folks say, well, nobody's writing good music for the organ anymore. And I say, well, when's the last time you commissioned something? You know, if we don't create a market for it, it's like for those of us that go out and play concerts, we have to create a market for that. And I think that we all should be commissioning new organ music, new choral music, organ plus instruments, finding new ways to really make the organ accessible and exciting for people.
Well, explain that process a little bit then. If I want to create some new music, where do I start?
I think you have to find composers that are writing things that you love, or someone that you know maybe hasn't written for organ, but you like their compositional output, and you might be willing to spend some time and work with them on various aspects of writing for the organ. I think one of the reasons that a lot of composers avoid writing for the organ is just a lack of basic understanding and knowledge or experience with the instrument, aside from just hearing it. So I think organists need to really strive to find composers that are writing great music and try to help educate them about the organ.
What about the money aspect of it?
The money aspect of it, it can get very expensive very quickly. I've been fortunate to sort of privately fund all of my commissions from generous benefactors, and so that's been a great experience for me. But I think a lot of composers, you know, there are exchanges that you can do. For example, with some of the licensing and recording of these sorts of things, you know, if you agree to let them feature these recordings on the publisher website, or, you know, there's always sort of different agreements that can be met for exchanging a recital perhaps for a new piece of music, or who knows. But I think that there's always ways to work things out aside from just money. But yes, I mean, just as we as performers want to make a living wage, so do composers, and we should try to honor that as best we can.
Talk about some of the challenges you have as a performer, preparing for different concerts, different organs, and preparing programs.
Yeah. I mean, last night was a real joy because the organ, it did everything that you expected it to do. You know, sometimes when you, when you get a contract to go play a recital, sometimes you know the venue and sometimes you don't. More often than not, you don't know the venue. And so the piece of paper tells you, oh, the room has X number of seconds of acoustic and here is the specification. And you try to take a wild guess and hope that the program will really work. But that you don't ever get a sense of, well, how fast is the key action? You know, is the pedal board tight, or is it, you know, how is this going to all play out? And how do things balance? So I think there have been a number of occasions where I have arrived at a venue and prepped a program and decided, you know, this piece, X piece, just doesn't work. And so I will do a program change on occasion. I try to avoid doing that. But if it's something I feel really strongly about, I certainly will swap out. So I think as organists, one of our challenges is that we have to have enough repertoire sort of up our sleeve at any given time, because it's not like traveling as a pianist where you can sort of, within some realm of expectation, know what to get. But, you know, 1 week you're playing on a four-manual Schoenstein, and the next week you're playing on a two-manual replica of a Hildebrandt organ, you know, so, and everything in between. I think I run a pretty wide gamut. I was fortunate in my undergrad studies, as we now talked about, to work with Robert Bates, who's sort of become known as an early music specialist, but also wrote a lot of 20th century music himself. He has composed music for organ and tape and some other avant-garde sort of mediums. And so I think that there I've been fortunate to study with people that have inspired different aspects of repertoire, certainly, whether that be with early music with Robert Bates or more romantic music with David Higgs, perhaps, and then sort of transcriptions and accompanying and all the sort of console management things that Ken Cowan offers.
Now, while talking with Daryl, I brought up the elephant in the room, the fate of Westminster Choir College. If you're like me, or if your Facebook feed is like mine, you know something's going on there, but the details are sketchy. Even though Daryl is in no more of a position than anyone else to know the future, he was able to explain the details of this situation and how we got where we are today.
Yeah, it's a very complicated issue. Back in the early 90s, Westminster... Well, I guess even as early as the late 80s, Westminster was approaching bankruptcy. And so they were seeking someone to purchase the school that would take over the school. And they had several offers. The offer they ended up accepting was from Rider University, which is about, 15 miles or so, maybe, up the road in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, from Princeton. And for the last 25 years, they've provided a stable partnership for Westminster and provided Westminster 25 years more of existence that they may not have had that partnership not worked out. Actually, the same semester I began, fall of 2015, Rider University hired a new president. Westminster hired a new dean, and so there was a lot of change that happened as soon as I arrived, and we were all very optimistic, but I think that the current president has been hired with a clear task of balancing the budget of the university, which is an understandable task for any board of trustees to want their university president to do. There are, of course, infinite numbers of ways that you can go about doing that. And one of the ways that they have sought to balance the budget is through seeking a new partner for Westminster Choir College. So on March 28th, the Board of Trustees voted to sell Westminster to a new school. And essentially that will take on one of three forms. Either the new partner will buy the land and the school and leave the school in Princeton. They're also offering the school, the programs, and potentially faculty and students to be relocated to another campus. Or they're also just offering the land for sale, in which case the programs would be temporarily moved to the Lawrenceville campus of Rider University. They were looking at moving everything to the Lawrenceville campus of Rider and potentially building some new buildings. The unfortunate part of that was they never presented us with any architectural drawings of these said new buildings. And I think if they had just approached the alumni and the faculty and everybody else with a real plan, the backlash may not have been quite so intense. It also didn't help that this was announced early December, right before we were going into our big Christmas programs and final exams and everything else. So it was just a very sort of tense time, to say the least.
So there is an explanation for you. The outcome of all of that is still to be seen, but for now, Daryl is looking forward to his future at the University of Houston and carrying on some of the traditions of quality that Westminster is known for.
Having been a student at the University of Houston, the choral program at University of Houston is doing exceptional work. Since my time, I graduated in 2011, and while I was there, we did two international competitions, and since then, they've continued to win major international competitions. And so I'm not sure that I would ever be happy going to a school that didn't have a really active and vibrant choral program, because I really do think that organists have to have an understanding of how the voice works and have to have personal experience singing. And so that's the magic of Westminster, certainly. But I don't think that that's exclusively tied to the school in Princeton. And I'll also mention that it's, I think, convenient, perhaps, that the two people in charge of the choral program at the University of Houston are actually Westminster alumni themselves. So there is sort of a good sense of carrying on the tradition of Westminster. And regardless of what happens with Westminster, there's no denying that it's played an incredibly important role in the American choral music scene and has influenced the lives of thousands and thousands of people around the globe.
What can we do specifically to help bring up new organists?
First and foremost, I think be very invitational and willing to show off the instrument at a local church. We would do demonstrations for children's ministries and things like that at church. I would always have students from the Performing Arts High School in Houston come to the church, which was just a few blocks away, and I would do a little mini organ concert, give them a tour of the chambers. But I think if people are given the opportunity to be exposed to a really great pipe organ, or even a not-so-great pipe organ, they're going to be captivated by the music that comes out of it and certainly the mechanics of it. And so I think we just have to really accept that not everybody's going to have exposure or access to a pipe organ, and so we have to find ways to create that sort of experience for people, I think.
What's advice you would give to junior high, high school, undergraduate looking to be an organist like yourself?
Well, I think one of the things that personally I feel very strongly about is obviously an understanding of a broad range of repertoire and understanding of stylistic performance practice. But even more importantly than that, frankly, is one's ability to really function as a collaborative musician. Whether that be as a accompanist for a choral ensemble or as a chamber music player or certainly in how someone prepares and plays hymns.
Do you think we have a problem with organists not being collaborative today?
I do. And I wrestled actually in revising degree plans at Westminster and looking ahead to curriculum at the University of Houston, should we not be starting a degree called collaborative organ? You know, there's this huge collaborative piano section of academia now that's very successful in producing a lot of great talent. And honestly, organists need that same level of understanding of vocal pedagogy, of choral conducting, of obviously repertoire and building their own chops. But there's such a bigger picture in order to really become marketable for a full-time position. And I think a lot of people have this sense in the organ world that, oh, there aren't any full-time positions out there anymore. That's really not true. There are full-time positions if you have a broad range of skill. If you want to be, say, a Mufat specialist, it might be a little harder for you to find a full-time church job. But I think that the organ world is shifting away, and if we in academia can help broaden our curriculum to meet a broader base of student, I think that will be very successful for the profession for the next decade and beyond.
My thanks today to Daryl Robinson for talking to me. His website is darylrobinson.com, and we've linked to it from our website at theorgan.com. On the post for this show, you can find information about all the music you've heard, as well as a link to albums Daryl has performed on. We've also included a video of the performance of George Baker's Rumba for Organ, Percussion, and Dancers from the 2016 AGO National Convention in Houston. It's just 5 minutes long, and it's well worth it. On Daryl's website, you can find information about his upcoming appearances, including the Kimmel Center Organ Day in Philadelphia on June 10th, the Royal School of Church Music Training Course this July in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he's playing a recital at First Plymouth Congregational Church in Lincoln, Nebraska on November 5th. We talked about that organ on the August 16, 2015 episode of At the Organ. And in August, he'll be playing the dedication of the new Nichols & Simpson organ at South Main Baptist Church in Houston. Commissioned for this event is the Fantasy on Thaxted by Aaron David Miller that we're hearing right now. Speaking of organ dedications, I want to let you know about the upcoming dedication recital of the recently installed Reuter organ at the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Springfield, Illinois. This all-pipe organ was featured on the cover of The American Organist in April. This recital will be performed by Dr. Frederick Holman on Saturday, June 17th at 7 o'clock Central Time. Now, if you can't make it, this recital will be streamed live on organlive.com. So put it on your calendar, and please join us in this live broadcast event. I hope you enjoyed this episode of At the Organ. If you did, please send me an email. The address is info@theorgan.com. You can also go to our website and comment directly on the post for the show. Once again, I do want to remind you that we are still looking for people who would like to be involved in the production of At the Organ, either behind the scenes or behind the microphone. Send me a message. Again, the email is info@theorgan.com. You can subscribe to At the Organ on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. If you like our show, please leave us a positive review or comment on those services. Doing so helps other people interested in organ music to find our show. You can also like us on Facebook, and there you can share our episodes with your other organ music-loving friends. That's all for this episode. I'm Brent Johnson, and I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to At the Organ. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. Send your email to info@attheorgan.com or just go to our website where you can comment on the show. There you can also hear this show again or find back episodes. The address is attheorgan.com. At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening.